Coming up on Tech News Today, Microsoft calls Android an abusive monopoly. In that voice. Also, new Mac Pros coming? Maybe. Pandora doubles its users, but doesn't make any money. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, April 9th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Interop. Interop Las Vegas is the largest independent technology conference and expo for IT professionals. If you're in IT, you cannot miss this year's event. Visit www.interop.com to register and use code WELV for $200 off a conference pass or a free expo pass. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT4. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show we keep you up to date with the most important stories in the tech world. Put them in context for you, starting with the 10 top stories of the day in the Fuse de News. Whoa.
I mean, exciting one.
Go download the video version if you haven't already. The Fair Search organization led by Microsoft and Nokia have publicized a complaint they made against Android in the European Union. The EU is already investigating Google for complaints regarding internet search. The new complaint is against Android, citing the requirement that Google apps be given prominent placement if Android is used for free, and also asserts that free itself is a predatory price.
It's official. Austin will be the second city after Kansas City in the U.S. to receive Google Fiber, the company's high-speed broadband and TV service. The news was made at in an announcement in Austin about an hour ago, and it comes after a few years of pretty heavy campaigning by Austin to get Google Fiber. The first homes in the city should be connected by mid-2014. So how much is it going to cost? A report published by Bernstein yesterday said it would cost Google around $11 billion to go for a medium-sized national rollout like Austin.
You know what they say about AMD chips? Once you pop, you can't stop. AMD will be at the heart of the PS4, and according to Bloomberg Report, AMD will also be inside the next version of the Xbox. This AMD chip would also be x86 architecture, which would make developers quite happy. The Xbox 360 uses an IBM Power PC processor, and I'm being alerted to the chat room that I was talking about Pringles and not AMD chips.
Samsung Galaxy Note 8 just arrived in the UK, and now it's coming to the United States as well. The Wi-Fi-only 16-gigabyte Note will hit shelves April 11th for $399. No voice calls, no data connection, but it does have a 1.6 gigahertz Exynos 4-quad processor, 2 gigabytes of RAM, and a micro SD card slot that can add up to 64 gigabytes of storage. No word on when other versions might reach the United States.
Almost 60,000 apps have been removed from Google Play, probably because a number of apps don't meet the store's anti-spam policies. Now, some may have been pulled by the publishers themselves, but not 60,000. Many of these were pulled by Google directly, at least that's according to TechCrunch. This is the highest number of apps Google has ever removed in a single month, suggesting a little bit of a closer focus on apps that contravene terms and conditions.
The United States Air Force has designated 6 cyber tools as weapons. This designation will help the Air Force receive funding from the United States government. The Air Force also plans to add 1,200 people to its cyber workforce. That's a 20% increase.
What are the tools?
I don't think they mentioned it. That's the thing.
Come on, Air Force. The Pirate Bay website is always on the move, and now it's in Greenland, sort of. Torrent Freak reports Pirate Bay thought the Swedish authorities might be coming after their .se domain name, so the site switched to .gl and got a new set of IP addresses to boot. Pirate Bay dropped their .org domain early last year to avoid United States authorities.
Popular messaging app WhatsApp says, in fact, we're not in discussions to sell our company to Google. Earlier this week, a single source report from Digital Trends said the company was mulling over a $1 billion sale to old Goog. These rumors have swirled before, though. Back in December, the word was that Facebook was the interested buyer. And back then, WhatsApp said that story was also factually inaccurate.
Aye, old Goog. Intel announced its next generation of Thunderbolt at the National Association of Broadcasters Conference in Las Vegas. It's codenamed Falcon Ridge. That's Thunderbolt, not the NAB conference. And will enable 4K video file transfer and display simultaneously and run at 20 gigabits per second while maintaining backwards compatibility with previous cables and connectors. Expect production on Falcon Ridge-based Thunderbolt stuff to begin in 2014.
26-year-old Ryan Aykroyd has pled guilty to one count of computer hacking. Aykroyd admitted he was a part of the group Lulzsec, using the name Kayla, where he worked with others to hack into PBS and the Arizona State Police. Aykroyd will not be facing trial on another count of conducting a denial-of-service attack and will be sentenced on May 14th.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by a brand new sponsor. I highly encourage you to give them a warm welcome. Interop Las Vegas, a conference now in its 28th year, the largest independent conference and expo for IT professionals. And this year, the agenda, the speakers, the size of the exhibition, and the trending enterprise IT topics that it will cover are pretty much pointing to the fact that you cannot miss this year's event. Father Robert is a big fan of this event. He says it was created by engineers for engineers. The entire philosophy is to get a group of like-minded individuals in a room, present them with a problem, and go to work. In fact, if you're a fan of This Week in Enterprise Tech, Father Robert, Brian Chee, and Curtis Franklin all met at Interop. So there would be no Twiet if there was no Interop. Six important reasons you should make plans to Interop Las Vegas. Vendor neutral. They don't favor people, so you can actually easily compare solutions across a variety of approaches. A breadth of conference content. Interop offers deep content in over 125 conference sessions and workshop topics. Things like big data, cloud computing, bring your own devices, all that important stuff. Hands-on access to over 300 solution providers. You can see interoperability in action. One of the highlights of Interop is InteropNet, a real-life network of the newest gear and solutions supporting the latest standards. They give training specifically for Apple in the enterprise, if you're curious about that. And this year is the Information Week CIO Summit. It's a great opportunity for CIOs and IT executive leadership to learn how to drive, fund, measure, and profit from a culture of innovation from those who've actually done it. Summit's going to feature technology executives, including Bill Schlau, CIO of the San Francisco Giants, the world champion San Francisco Giants. Lyndon Tennyson, CIO and Senior Vice President of Union Pacific. Folks from ADP, Allstate. If you're not convinced, I don't know what else I could tell you. So please go visit www.interop.com to register and use this code WELV. That'll get you $200 off a conference pass or get you an expo pass for free. That's www.interop.com. Use that offer code WELV. And we thank Interop and welcome them for their support of Tech News Today. All right, joining us to talk about the stories of the day, we're also happy to welcome Raj Diyut back to the show. He's a writer and contributor for Mac Talk and Mac World Australia. How are things going? And Raj, thank you for being up early for us.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me back. A very nice warm day coming into Melbourne this morning, so that'll be very nice to wake up to again in another 4 hours.
Excellent. You can see Wednesday coming on the horizon, I know. Let's start by talking about this Fair Search complaint against Google in the EU. Those who don't know, Fair Search is an organization that's made up not only of Microsoft and Nokia, but Oracle, Expedia, TripAdvisor, Twenga, Foundum, and Ad Marketplace. They are already pursuing a complaint in the EU against Google Search, which is saying that Google Search dominates the search. They favor their own search results. It's an antitrust investigation. Now, Fair Search has made public another complaint against Android. Fair Search lawyer Thomas Vinge wrote in a statement, "Google is using its Android mobile operating system as a Trojan horse to deceive partners, monopolize the mobile marketplace, and control consumer data." And this is all based on the fact that if you're an Android phone makers and you get the operating system for free, you get the apps for free, things like Google Maps, YouTube, or Play. But if you want to use those free apps, you have to preload the entire suite and give them prominent default placement on the phone. They say that that's an abuse of power. Raj, what do you think? Is Google justified in requiring placement in exchange for a free operating system, not to mention free apps?
I guess they can argue that, and they've had a little success arguing that in recent cases, I suppose. But what's interesting to me is that seeing Microsoft's name under the Fair Search members, didn't they have a very similar problem a few years ago now with Internet Explorer being the default install? So that one got shot. Well, the EU said that was a big no-no for them and won out. So it'd be interesting to see if the same thing happens to Google, who the success has been, I believe, in US cases so far, not so much over in the EU.
Well, yeah, and Microsoft has had continuing problems with that browser choice selection screen that they were forced to implement. The EU said, look, you can't force people to use IE. You've got to let them have a choice. So there's a version of Windows in Europe that has a selection screen that comes up. There was a technical problem with it. They had to pay a fine. So yeah, they're mad. They're like, well, Android's doing the same thing. But are they really doing the same thing? Because you can get Android without the suite of Google Apps.
I don't think Google's doing anything close to what Microsoft was doing. When Microsoft had IE basically built into Windows, it was at the core of pretty much every freaking Explorer window that existed, including the File Explorer had some IE ties to it. So the fact that Android is so open that you could just remove these apps or not even have Google branded things. On top of that, Android has the ability to keep changing your defaults. So it's not like you're always using the same engine to use Gmail or to get into email or any of those things. I don't even think Google pre-installs Chrome on some of their operating system. You get their really crappy browser and then you go out and you get Chrome. So I don't know what exactly Google would be doing that would cause such a huge issue, other than ruffling Microsoft's feathers, because they're obviously trying to get some real serious market share in the mobile market.
Yeah, I think that it's a stretch to argue, well, I would like to just take the YouTube app and they won't let me do that. Or I want to get the Google Play store of apps, but they make me take all this other stuff. I mean, that is their argument, is that's an abuse of power. And at the same time, they're also making an argument that giving away the operating system is predatory because it allows no competitors. Nobody else can afford to make a competing operating system that can compete on that price. And again, Google is abusing its search power there because it makes its money off search. Sarah, do you buy that argument that They shouldn't be giving away the operating system for free because that's unfair to everybody else who makes an operating system?
No, not really. I think the comparisons to, you know, the Microsoft of yesteryear is, you can't make a direct comparison because, as I said, it's a really different situation. And also, I mean, we're talking about apps on a smartphone. First of all, Google's not keeping you from downloading other apps. Second of all, you can reorder them however you want. So it's not even really the same as what Google has been accused of as far as search results go, right? Well, Google, you know, they might allow some search results from Expedia, but it's way down the page, or maybe it's on the third page and that's buried and we don't get anything out of that. I mean, you have so much customization offered to you on Android that, and really, and this is, you know, the thing about Google apps is as a rule, you know, they're a lot better than some of the competition too. So there's a little bit of like, well, everybody's just using, you know, these Google apps that come with the operating system. Well, because actually they're, you know, in some cases aren't alternatives that are better for a lot of us. So yeah, I think this is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, it seems like it to me, although I guess what they're trying to do is just harass. I mean, the Daily Telegraph had an article today saying they're just trying to harass Google as much as possible and make things as hard as possible and distract them as much as possible. And in that sense, maybe it does make sense. Otherwise, I don't feel like the Android thing has a case at all. When you're giving away a free version of the operating system that doesn't have all the things you're complaining about, that seems like a remedy right there. You can get Android. You can be like Amazon and put out your own version, like tons of companies in China are doing, putting out their own version without the Google Play Store. Pandora. Pandora is a contradiction wrapped in an enigma. They complain that they don't make any money because of royalty situation, but their users love them. They're making lots more users. And we're seeing lots of usage on mobile, helping lots of companies like that. Sarah, what do you got for us today?
Yeah, it's true. So Pandora has come out with some really interesting statistics. But the biggest one is that they have 200 million registered users, which is not only a lot of users, but has doubled from just 2 years ago. You know, Pandora has been around since, what, 2005 and it's in its current incarnation. So that is some serious growth over just the last couple of years. And clearly you can attribute that to people signing up for Pandora via mobile. They've got over 140 million registered users, they say, that listen to Pandora on smartphones. And one in three smartphone owners tune into Pandora each month. Huh. When you think about it that way, of course, these are U.S. numbers because Pandora is not available in a variety of countries that have a lot of smartphone users. But that is some crazy growth. Pandora also was added to Windows Phone 8 back in March. You might recall that they're kind of given a free no ads until 2014 for anybody who wants to get familiar with Pandora for the next few months and get hooked. So in that sense, yeah, I mean, I think this is clearly... Sure, there are probably a good number of accounts that are being created via access to Pandora on in a browser on a desktop. Excuse me, but I think it's clearly showing that the smartphone usage is pretty through the roof. You know, speaking of smartphone usage, there's another story today that it's a little bit a little bit strange. Is that Vine is clearly just iOS. Pandora is available via a variety of mobile OSs, but Vine is the company that Twitter bought, the 6-second short video clip app. Just launched back in January. Twitter acquired it before it even launched about 6 months ago. And there's all these big stories like Vine is the number one free app in the Apple App Store. And some of the stories that are sort of touting this, yay, Vine, look, you finally made it, say, you know, when you're the number one app in the App Store, it doesn't mean you're the most downloaded app ever or anything. It just means that you have momentum right now. There are a lot more people who are downloading the app, than were a few days ago. Twitter's own app, for example, is like in the 30s, but that's just because a lot of people have already downloaded it. So there's a little bit of like there's some momentum there, sure, but where is it really coming from? But I also think it's really interesting that Vine is at least enjoying some surge in downloads, but it's still iOS only. I mean, you can't even use Vine when you're on Android yet. So I wonder what these numbers are going to look like when eventually that service does come to Android. Raj, do you make much of an app being number one in the App Store, especially when you compare it to something like Pandora that has many millions of users?
I guess so. Apple still have a fairly large stranglehold over the market here in Australia. So if an app's sort of the number one here for the majority of people, it tends to mean that there's a big push for that. But normally it's because it's coming out on the other platforms soon anyway. So things like Vine and Instagram, which took forever to come out on Android as well as iOS, it's really up to them. I mean, if all they're going to do is hurt their own market share if they're not, Instagram's finally done it now. But for Vine, I think they should be doing it sooner rather than later, because the market share between iOS and Android is definitely shifting the other way these days until a new iPhone or some amazing innovation from Apple with iOS 7 perhaps. But they're really shooting themselves in their own foot, I would have said, if they're not actively or trying to get that out as soon as possible. With Pandora, they recently launched here in Australia, so, I mean, we aren't accounting for another 100 million people, but I know they are making pushes out into other markets, and that's a good thing for them. And I'm sure they've got some deal that with the no ads thing that is tiding them over in the for the time being when they come to complaining about revenues and things like that. I'm sure Microsoft have helped them out a little bit there if they can offer that kind of thing, or maybe they have just bitten the bullet and decided to we really need to boost our numbers for investors and we'll do that by launching it on a new platform. Windows Phone's still a little low out here, I would have said, but it's a bit of a blip in the rise when Windows Phone 8 came out, but no great flooding of the market, that's for sure.
Yeah, I do think that Vine being up at the top of the App Store this far after release might be a little bit surprising, but I agree with what you're saying there, Raj. Let's talk about the big Mac Pro rumor that's been kicking around and around and around. We've been waiting to see. Was Tim Cook serious when he said we'll see? We'll get back pro news this year. Sounds like maybe it's true. Maybe we're getting one. What's the scoop, IS?
Now, according to Mac Daily News, Apple's going to finally update the Mac Pro as early as this month. But according to the report, that date could slip to June. I don't know how you can slip a date that hasn't even announced, but that's what the report says. A CNET source says that Apple doesn't have any plans to have a Mac Pro press event by any means. That's no surprise. And also, the last update to the Mac Pro was June 11th, 2012, with the processor bump and more RAM. Now, the buyer's guide over at Mac Rumors says the Mac Pro is refreshed on average at about 427 days. This current Mac Pro is 302 days old. Now, what was missing that last update? No Thunderbolt, no USB 3.0, no faster SATA drive, SATA port, that is. Raj, what features does Apple need to put in the new Mac Pro?
A lot. they're behind a lot. And it hasn't really been reflected in the pricing of the Mac Pro, which, you know, the 12 cores is still $4,500 Australian dollars. So they really need to play ball here and get up to speed. And they're really behind. I guess a lot of people were just expecting the line to be dropped completely. So it's kind of nice to hear some news finally that there is going to be a refresh. But with Intel announcing the update to Thunderbolt, it would have been nice if that newer version, I suppose, was going to be in there for this refresh. That's not coming out until next year, though. So let's hope they don't hold off for that. But, you know, just the basics, better processor, better, bigger hard drives. I mean, 1 terabyte standard for these probably isn't going to cut it anymore. Whether they go the Fusion Drive route, I probably doubt it, being the professional market. They'll leave it up to the people buying them to sort that stuff out. But they really need to come fully loaded with all the bells and whistles. Otherwise, they're going to be in a lot of trouble, and the line will pretty much die off. It's not where Apple have sort of been focusing their efforts on lately for the last few years, and it's really shown by keeping this line completely retarded for quite a time now.
Sarah, Apple used to pride itself on being for creative professionals. They have that brand new ad campaign trying to push Final Cut Pro 10 a little bit more during NAB. Did Apple miss an opportunity while NAB is going on to say, hey, look, we've actually refreshed our flagship desktop for you guys?
That's an interesting thought. I don't think that if you are a creative professional and you're interested in using Apple products, you're going to have a hard time finding out, you know, when the Mac Pro is eventually upgraded. You know, I don't know that NAB is necessarily the place that they had to do that. I also think that this is kind of like a, well, we're talking about this because it's just been so long since Apple refreshed the Mac Pro. And Apple has been, you know, besides, I guess, I could point to the latest version of Final Cut Pro and Apple really trying to remind professionals who have a lot of editing skills that it's actually a really good software program, you know, for the video editor. Apple's been going full consumer for a while now. And I think even the people who, in the last Mac Pro refresh, who said, hey, we didn't get Thunderbolt, we didn't get USB 3.0, what is Apple thinking? I mean, even a lot of those complaints seem to have quieted. And I'd certainly like to see a refreshed Mac Pro, but I don't really see it happening this month. Maybe I'm crazy, but I just don't see it.
Tom, I think you're crazy.
All right, let's hear it.
I don't think you're crazy. Well, I don't think you're crazy for that reason. I think we could see an unannounced refresh this month, but that would be the kind of thing that's kind of disappointing, where they just kind of bump up the specs again, like they did 302 days ago. If Tim Cook's going to follow on with something worthwhile from his comment that we'll have news for Mac Pro users, we want to see something better than that. I guess they could still do something better than that without an event, though. I mean, lots of companies don't do events for every single upgrade they do.
I just wonder if that news for Mac Pro users is that Apple's going to kill it, and they're just going to kill the Mac Pro entirely and just say, look, we have this line of Thunderbolt accessories that makes your Mac Mini into a Pro device, because I don't see them bothering to do this anymore. That machine, the Mac Pro, it starts off, I think, at $2,500 in the U.S. That's crazy expensive, considering it's basically off-the-shelf PC parts, just arranged really beautifully, great housing, but there's really nothing distinct about that hardware anymore that it puts it head and shoulders above anything. So if Apple's going to bother to refresh this, they've got to make this device like just scream with power, or it's got to be something unique, because it's just a PC at this point.
Well, what they really should do is come out with an event that has the whole Pro line. If they're really interested in this market, refresh Final Cut so it's back to where it should be instead of this balked prosumer version. Come out with a new version of Aperture, which is the Pro line photography suite, and really make a song and dance about the Mac Pro. And like I said, just fill it with top of the line stuff, because it is just an off the shelf PC. Like you said, there's nothing else about it. But they really need to get behind it if they want to continue with the line. Otherwise, just get rid of it because it's wasting everyone's time.
Yeah, what's taking so long? Make your decision. Get off the fence, Apple. We're at war. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Maybe you want to just build your own computers and sell them. You can do that. You can do it quickly, and your site will look great. Squarespace introduces a new commerce solution, allows you to instantly create a store and start selling products. Powerful and flexible e-commerce solution takes advantage of the mobile responsive designs, the award-winning templates that you can get from Squarespace, and then integrates all of that with the ability to sell physical and digital goods. Fast merchant accounts set up so you can accept payments right away, credit or debit cards. One interface for order management, tracking orders, providing customer email updates, printing shipping labels, and adding coupons. And Squarespace Commerce is included with your business plan subscription. It's a new tier for Squarespace. It's $24 a month when you sign up for a year, or $30 for the monthly plan. Plus, as I mentioned, you still can sign up for the best mobile experience, for that fast and easy to use template that, frankly, I should be thanking Squarespace every time we do a new Sword and Laser, because it just makes it so much easier to update the episodes. And better social media integration, exceptionally well designed. Squarespace is an all-in-one platform integrating all your website needs, domains, design, development, commerce, hosting, and 24/7 customer support. Try it free. You may say, oh, I probably have to give them a bunch of information and my credit. No, you don't have to do any of that stuff. Go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account. You give them an email address. That's it. No credit card needed. Just try it out. Start building your website. Then, if you do decide to purchase it, obviously you'll give them a credit card number then. But give them this too. Use the offer code TNT4 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That's monthly and annual plans. If you buy an annual plan, you get 10% off the whole year. And don't forget about free domain registrations for annual plan customer subscriptions. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT4. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Oh, JCPenney just fired somebody. Why do we care, Sarah?
Well, because his name was Ron Johnson, who many of you remember used to be the senior vice president of retail at Apple. About 10 years, actually, which is actually a position that is still open. You might recall that John Browett ran retail after Ron Johnson had left at Apple. He had come from electronics retailer Dixon's. And as far as everybody believes, including Browett himself, it wasn't a good fit. In fact, he's even gone on record as saying it wasn't a good fit at the company. But Johnson has been at JCPenney as well, and hasn't really worked out there too well either. The stock had fallen quite a bit while he was in charge there, and a lot of people say, well, JCPenney, you know, even though he had experienced quite a bit of success, I mean, many people credit Ron Johnson with Apple's retail business becoming extremely, extremely strong while he was there. JCPenney's, that's a business that's sort of more of a turnaround project, right? Rather than a growth project because it's been around for so long. And so then it kind of turns into, well, will Apple just hire Johnson back? I mean, the whole idea is that he was looking for other opportunities. He had sort of conquered the retail business. Raj, you know, obviously Apple is still on the up and up when it comes to retail stores. They want to open retail stores in emerging markets and have more of a presence in places that they don't already. Could Ron Johnson be the guy?
I mean, well, he's proved himself before, but excuse me. I guess the question is, does he want to?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Like he was looking for a challenge when he went to JCPenney. He got one, obviously. It didn't work out too well by the looks of things, but does he want to come back to the doing the same thing as before? I don't know if Apple really have changed their strategies or anything other than expanding into other markets. I mean, they're popping up here in Australia on every street corner. It's like a deli everywhere. But does he really want to go back to that? Is there growth for him? I really don't know. But if I was Ron Johnson, if I was looking for a cruisy, easy job that I knew how to do, maybe I would go back to Apple. But if I wanted a challenge, then I'd be looking at maybe taking on Microsoft's Windows stores or something like that.
As we heard, Samsung is going to expand its presence, especially within Best Buy stores. A story today says the LG wants to focus on new stores in emerging markets in India and the Middle East and Africa for its suite of products. Is this something that, you know, is this a good opportunity for Apple to kind of rethink how its retail presence looks, especially in markets where there isn't one already?
I'm not sure if Apple wants to redefine what they've established. This storefront that Apple's been using for a while, where anybody can come in, play with toys, and then basically not be harassed by any staff. It was a really freeing experience when you go into that. And now all these other stores are copying it. So if Apple wants to differentiate itself just for the sake of differentiating itself, I think it would do it. But in this case, Apple's experience is so well ingrained in those stores. They have these flagship stores in New York and all over the world. They have a very they have a really consistent feel from store to store. So I don't know if they're going to bother to change anything up. If they go back to their old retail head of Ron Johnson, that might help a little bit. But I'm not really sure what exactly Apple can do, since it's basically setting the model for Samsung and Windows and all these other stores that are very similar in this showcase kind of arena.
All right, let's talk about Microsoft and Windows Blue. Now, if you watch Windows Weekly, which you should do, actually, comes on Thursdays on live.twit.tv, you know Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott have been following this very closely. But the rumors keep weaving, they keep changing, and whether or not this is actually an integration of Windows Phone or not into Windows 8 is one of the big questions. What are we hearing today, Ayaz?
All right, so a DigiTimes report popped up yesterday saying that Microsoft's Windows Blue is actually an independent project that's working on merging Windows for the PC and Windows Phone, the operating system. The purpose of merging the two would be to compete with Google's Android and Chrome. And the same report says Microsoft is developing another OS that will be available in the next version of Windows. That'd be 8.1. So that means that Windows Blue might be something separate from Windows 8.1, because that's the news as we understand it. And this report got lots of reactions in the tech world. Tom Warren, cracks me up at The Verge, wrote on Twitter, "Windows Blue does not merge Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone into a single product. Do not listen to DigiTimes. They're drunk." Ars Technica's Peter Bright, he was very curious about the idea of Windows Blue being different than Windows 8.1. And he asked the question, what does the blue designation mean anyway? Because Paul Thurrott, he knows that pretty much a lot of Microsoft products have a blue version coming up, including Windows Phone, so it could be a much larger thing. And Paul says there's no evidence that Microsoft's merging the two operating systems, but he thinks that'd be a great idea. Raj, does it sound like Microsoft to even have an independent team that would be overseeing Windows Phone and Windows, and then with the goal of merging them?
Well, who knows? it's what Apple are supposedly doing, aren't they? With iOS and Mac OS, they've pretty much said that they're trying to merge the two. So why wouldn't Microsoft follow in suit? I mean, they're the ones that are playing catch up at the moment. And for anyone that's had the pleasure of using Windows 8, you'll know that they're playing catch up. It wouldn't surprise me if they are. I couldn't. There's so much speculation about what Blue is and whether that's this integration of the two OSs or not. Who knows? But I'm sure it's being worked on somewhere in Microsoft, whether it's being worked on as a side project or the main Windows line. I would say at this point it's probably still two separate product streams, but there probably is a little team of engineers hidden away in some dark cell somewhere that are doing it as their sole day-to-day job, I'd imagine. But whether it'll ever see the light of day or whether it is blue or not, well, only time will tell, and Microsoft will tell us all when they're ready to tell us.
Tom, is DigiTimes drunk?
Probably. And that may have no relevance on their reporting. You know, the implication here is that that would mean that they have bad reporting. Many of the best reporters in journalism history have been drunk. But that aside, I do think that they're probably also misinterpreting or wrong. This could mean a lot of different things. For instance, when iOS came out, don't forget, Steve Jobs made a big deal about how this was essentially OS X running on a phone. That doesn't mean you can take an app from iOS and run it in OS X, nor does it mean that you would want that. So, what Microsoft is probably pursuing, and probably should be pursuing, is the ease of porting applications across the platforms, make it easier on developers, maybe a unified kernel structure or something like that. And that could be giving rise to a lot of these rumors. On the other hand, I don't think it would be a good idea for you to be able to install the exact same operating system on a phone as you do on a tablet, as you do on a desktop. That just doesn't make sense. It doesn't run as well. It's not optimized. So some happy middle is probably what I think is the truth here, drunk or not.
Sarah, Raj made an interesting point about the fact that Apple has combined its iOS and OS X teams. Previously, everyone was pretty siloed. Microsoft is famously known for having siloed divisions. Do you think that this could actually happen, where they'd be breaking this apart and actually, by breaking apart their silos, putting themselves back together?
I'm pretty much in agreement with Tom here. I think that the idea that teams need to be working more closely together and making it as easy as possible for developers to want to be part of the ecosystem makes absolute sense. It's probably a little bit of a story DigiTimes kind of ran away with it a little bit and said, it's going to be a single product. And I agree with The Verge here. It's like, no, that would take a lot more work than what's going on here. That's not necessarily the case. But it doesn't mean that that the teams aren't talking about eventually down the road. I mean, 10 years from now, I don't even think we'll be having this conversation about, you know, what can be possible on a mobile OS versus, you know, the legacy OSs that we're used to before. So I think there're probably conversations going on that make this not just a rumor.
And it wouldn't surprise me with Apple losing Scott Forstall and things getting friendlier there, with Microsoft losing Steven Sinofsky at Windows as a Windows head. It wouldn't surprise me too much if they were trying to figure out how to make everything work in a cohesive experience. Whether they merge them or not, I don't know. But that tile interface seems like it does scale, because I was reading this report that Windows Phone 8 is going to support resolutions of 1080p, which is closer and closer to a desktop resolution. So we're starting to get interesting feature overlap and capabilities between the operating systems, to the point where it seems like it might make sense for them to merge, just maybe not for a long time.
They're definitely wanting to make it easier for developers. In fact, if you really want to know what's going on with Windows Blue, download last week's Windows Weekly. Mary Jo, Paul, and Leo talk about all of this stuff, and they're probably not drunk yet. But the information's good. Let's finish up with News Corp COO Chase Carey at NAB, giving a keynote yesterday afternoon, said, talking about Aereo, that's the service that allows you to get your local channels in your local area over the internet, because they have an individual micro antenna that is assigned to you. Chase Carey says, if we can't have our rights properly protected through legal and governmental solutions, we will pursue business solutions. One solution would be to take the network and make it a subscription service. We're not going to sit idly by and let people steal our content. And actually, an executive from Univision said a similar thing. Aereo CEO Chet Kanogia told The Verge last week, after they won in court against a preliminary injunction, and said, judging from the past, if litigation doesn't work, the broadcasters will go to Congress. That's the path they've taken before. Meanwhile, there's also a separate case with Alki David's Aereo killer, where the judge disagreed with the Second Circuit and found that retransmission, even with an individual antenna, was a violation. Now, those are two different services with different ways of doing things. Aereo says that Alki David's Aereo killer service was different and less legally defensible. However, it's still in court for Aereo. They still have to prove that they didn't violate copyright by doing this. They're in the Second Circuit, which has been favorable to them so far. And I think what News Corp COO Chase Carey is doing here is saying, we'll change the law. And if we don't, we'll take our ball and go home. ISD, do you think they'll really stop broadcasting over the air if they run out of options?
I think Fox is, or News Corp, it might be crazy enough to do it for at least a short time. I don't think it would be a permanent solution for them at all. Or it may be even doing something as crazy as trying to move their shows to a different network that that's just on cable. But I would think all their deals in place, all of their studio deals and content deals could provide issues with them to actually be able to do this. But I'm expecting News Corp to lobby really hard to try to get something to change if the lawsuits don't work for them. But they might be crazy enough to do it.
Well, they like you say, they've got tons of local affiliate agreements. They have the NFL with a 10-year contract to deal with. The NFL's not going to like them not broadcasting over the air because there's millions of people who only get Fox over the air right now. Raj, I'm curious what you think about this. Obviously, News Corp with Rupert Murdoch has some roots in Australia, but this wouldn't affect you necessarily. Do you think they're crazy enough to do this?
I think they are crazy enough to do it. Fox don't have the greatest of reputations outside of the US, and if anyone's going to do it, then it would be them, I would have thought. But Rupert's not shy when it comes to a battle, and he generally gets his way or gets out of trouble, and I think he'll just take it in his stride, and News Corp will do what they normally do and get more money, whether it's by going to cable or somehow getting a court ruling or Congress ruling that requires Aereo to somehow pay them. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. But I think if it comes to it, they'll make the threats and go to a charge service on cable, or they'll get a ruling beforehand that basically puts Aereo out of business. Or it'll be an interesting battle to watch because, I mean, the technically, I wouldn't say they're doing anything wrong. It's no different to me having my free-to-air at home and then streaming it over those, I can't remember the name of the boxes that used to be popular a few years ago. They're just sort of taking that box into their own hands, and I'm paying for the privilege of not having to buy the hardware myself.
Sarah, you rely on over the air since you're a cord cutter,
and
forget whether it's Fox or not. Would you miss that option to get over the air?
To be able to freely get this content that I'm allowed to get? Of course. I think this is a bunch of hot air, is one way of putting it. I don't think that we are in danger of seeing Fox go behind some sort of a broadcast paywall because Aereo exists. In general, even though this is messy, I think this is necessary and overall a good thing for the television business in the long term, because it's disrupting a model that is not perfect. It's broken. It is limiting to a lot of people, and this is all a little bit silly. I understand why News Corp is mad. But you pointed to like the NFL, for example. It's like, come on, let's be honest here. You've got a lot of relationships with other entities that you rely on to get a lot of money. So think about maybe how to go into some sort of a partnership with Aereo rather than throwing a tantrum and making everyone else suffer.
Yeah, I mean, this is a way to get Congress on your side. Get enough people upset that they write their congressperson saying, you need to stop this Aereo business because I don't want to lose my over-the-air. That's what they're up to here. They have no intention of ever taking that over-the-air off until it makes sense technologically, and they just need to give back the spectrum because nobody's using it anymore. But enough people are using it right now. This is all a game of chicken. Let's play a game of randomizer instead. Yesterday, of course, the former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher passed away. And as these things happen, hashtags popped up on Twitter. One that popped up on Twitter was now Thatcher's dead. You don't put apostrophes or spaces in a hashtag. And a lot of people read it now that Cher's dead. And it caused quite a stir. Now, I've seen unfortunate hashtag misinterpretations before. Did any of you guys see this in the wild?
I did.
You did?
Yeah, I did. But I already knew about Thatcher, so that's how I read it. It's almost like It's almost like what you're conditioned to see based on if you're a Cher fan or not. What do you see?
And Cher is not dead.
No.
Just so you know.
As far as we know.
Yeah. These are the sorts of things that are really easy. You know, if you're like, ooh, are they talking about Cher? Let me do a quick check. You would know quickly.
No. Tom Hanks is dead, right?
Right.
I didn't bother checking that. I know it because I saw it in a hashtag. Yeah, exactly. No, you do need to.
Well, at least there's a hashtag that can be reused in the future. Okay, and now we know that it's got two ways, and we'll be reporting on the story a couple of years from now when everyone thinks it wasn't Margaret Thatcher already dead.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's move on and see what's on the calendar, Sarah.
We got a small calendar today, but an important one. BlackBerry Q10, that's the keyboard smartphone, is coming to Canada on April 30th. Get out your wallets. Get ready to type on a
get
real
that funny
physical
colored
keyboard.
Bunny out.
Get ready to type. Isn't that Q stands for QWERTY? Wait a minute. Oh, sorry.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
I got a caller from North Carolina who's wondering what Google's real motivation is behind bringing all this fiber to cities in the United States.
AT&T crew, listening to Monday's episode, discussion about the Google fiber rollout in Austin, Texas. And up until now, you know, everybody's speculation has been, you know, are they going to get into the ISP game and why would they do that? And, you know, thinking along the lines of, you know, they're doing something for the people. What if there's more behind it and this gives them more ability to scrape even more of your personal data than your email and your GPS location and everything else? Just curious to get your thoughts on that. My thoughts, bring it home. Scrape my data. I want fast internet. Bye.
Scrape away. Yeah. We here are so slobbering at the idea of gigabit per second internet that we're willing to swallow whole this story that Google is giving us, that they're just trying to show how you can roll it out. And when at the end of their blog post on the Austin announcement, they say, hey, any municipality that wants to do this, here's a link to resources and we'll try to help you set up your own without us getting involved. That's just a bunch of hogwash, right, Raj? I mean, you're outside the U.S., You can objectively tell us Google is just trying to steal our souls, right?
Oh, for sure. And they're just doing it in a quicker way now. our government is trying to implement gigabit internet across the country at the moment. So maybe Google are actually funding them behind the scenes. Who knows? But, yeah, I'd quite happily do whatever I could to get gigabit internet to my house. That'd be fine. They can take my they've already got all my information on email anyway. I don't know what else I can offer them. Maybe when I'm doing my washing, if I connect my washer-dryer to it or something. Who knows?
Yeah, I think that's everybody's feeling, right? Like, give me gigabit, you can take my children.
Well, Roger's right. They're spying on us anyway. Might as well get faster internet out of it. Why not? We got an email from Filippo. He says, hey, TNT crew, I was listening to the feedback on show 727 where Ewan made the comment, you don't really own anything anymore, you just license it. I have a bit of an issue with that mentality because it seems it makes it seem like games are an ephemeral medium that isn't going to go back to. It's a little disheartening to know that in a few short years I might not be able to enjoy games like Diablo 3 because the servers will no longer be working. Games can and often leave lasting impressions on people, much like great movies do, but while movies are perpetually available on more formats than you can shake a stick at, games are limited to the one or handful of platforms they were released on. I think we're doing ourselves a great disservice in just accepting this as the way it is or the way it's going to go. Games are a part of our history, just like books, music, and movies, and ought to be preserved in the same ways. This is why I get antsy when I hear about these stories on DRM schemes. But by not allowing us to actually own our games, it relegates them to forever being a second-class medium.
Yeah, and I think what Ewan was saying is you just need to be aware of that. You know, you aren't actually owning these games. You don't have a right of first sale to digital goods. So go into that with your eyes wide open.
Got another email from someone in the Aunt Zach family. That's what they said. Said, we haven't had cable TV in something like 5 years now in this family. Today, I got to see how that goes with a kid who's never had cable and knows only Netflix. We were at the doctor with, we'll just call the kid Jay, and she was watching SpongeBob on Nickelodeon. All of a sudden, she says, I don't want to watch this. I want to watch Dora. No, I want to watch Diego. She grabs the TV remote and starts trying to figure out how to stop the show and pick something else. I told her, no, this is the kind of TV you can't change to a different Nickelodeon show. She looks at me like, what?
I love this.
I've raised a digital on-demand child. To her, live cable TV is what black and white TV was to our generation.
This is totally a sign of things to come. Completely. I love it.
Do you hear that, Chase Carey? Maybe you don't want to just go to cable directly. Maybe skip over that and go right to the internet. If you're going to take your ball and go somewhere, just stream it directly to all of us. Hell, that's what the Ansack family wants, anyway.
And all screens will be touchscreen, by the way.
That's what kids think, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just the way it's going to be. Yeah.
What's the solution to a kid like that? Like, do we need software update? Something's wrong with the Nickelodeon here.
I keep touching the television. Nothing happens. By the way, it's Ansack, A-N-T-C-Z-A-K, not Anzac like Australian New Zealand Army Corps.
Which is April 25th.
That's a different kind of a family.
All right, folks. Thank you for watching Tech News Today. And Raj Dude, always a pleasure to have you. Thank you again, because I know that the time difference does not make it pleasant to get up to do the show. We really appreciate you doing it.
I love sleeping twice every night. It's a new wave, and I think I'm writing a book on it, which will be coming out shortly. How to sleep 2 hours, get up and do a show, and sleep 2 hours again.
It'll be called ZZZZZZ.
Until your book comes out, thanks for having me, guys. Where else could people find you online?
MacTalk.com.au is the place where you'll find me and most of my writings, and a lot of other great articles around the Apple and iOS family.
Check it out. Thanks again. And thanks to all the folks in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, where you can submit stories. You can vote them up, vote them down. It's open for you to choose. Go in there, technewstoday.reddit.com. You can also find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Happy to have Geek Dad blogger Ken Denmead on the show tomorrow. We'll see you then.